Welcome, everyone, to episode 479 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and we already have our first head coach firing of the season. So we're going to talk today about the Sacramento Kings firing Luke Walton. We'll talk about this new report from Tim Bontemps about some Celtics behind-the-scenes drama, and then we're going to touch on some other guys who we think might become available in the coming months and or years, some of the possible top targets maybe on Daryl Morey's list of 30. Before we get to all of that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. We're being hosted by Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very trusty co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going?
It is going fairly well, Brian. Looking forward to actually going on a vacation with my wife for the first time without kids since 2009.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that was actually before we became parents.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Well, that's exciting. And you're feeling better, it sounds like.
Yes, yes. Fortunately so. It took 2 weeks, but here we are. And I went to the doctor and she was like, yeah, so you know what? In about a week, there's a pretty good chance that you're going to get hit again. And it's another two-week cycle because these normal viruses, like not coronavirus, but these just the winter viruses, they're hitting extra hard this year for everyone.
Great.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yep.
Well, that was, well, at least the timing was good where, you know, you have your 1 week of being recovered while you're on vacation and then you can just be sick for the rest of the year.
That's what I'm thinking as well. Just screw my December. Just get me through our holiday. And you know what? Then you can do whatever you want with me, virus. It's fine.
Right. All right, Mort. So we have a lot to get to today. Let's start with the Sacramento Kings, who I'm sorry that I have to do this because I'm already like public enemy number one of Kings Twitter for pointing out that they lost to a Sixers team without all five starters from last year.
Yeah, yeah. You took one on the chin there.
Oh, it was worth it. It was absolutely worth it because you lost to a Sixers team without all five starters. I think that speaks to the level of dysfunction going on in Sacramento right now. Obviously, the Kings fired Luke Walton on Sunday. Mort, you and I have been Luke Walton critics for a while now. I think it's safe to say we were wondering.
Basically, since he's got hired, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, we were wondering why he had kept his job as long as he did. And Sam Amick of The Athletic, who is pretty plugged into the Kings camp, last year was reporting it was mostly a financial decision. He had multiple years left on his contract at that point. I believe now he only has one more year left after this one. So they do have to swallow some money, but not as much as they would have had they fired him last year. What did you think of the decision to fire Luke Walton? And then do you think Alvin Gentry, their interim head coach, is going to be able to turn this thing around and turn this team into a playoff team?
Well, I think when you can fire a coach 17 games into the year, instead of doing it in the off season where you can then start a thorough search, makes all the sense in the world. Like, come on. No, this is just another bit of the Kings, right? Where you just go Kangs. I mean,
yeah.
What the hell is the point to go into a fully fledged offseason and then give up on your coach 17 games in? Like, again, I don't disagree that this was the right decision. I disagree with the timing. You should have done at the end of last season. Like, you shouldn't have gone into the 2021-2022 season with him at the helm at all. And now you're mucking things up. You're going to go, oh, okay, so 17 games in. Now we need to get Alvin Gentry in. He's going to get a shot. Well, what if he doesn't work out? Then they need to go out and find someone else. And, like, at that point, like, De'Aaron Fox is going to be on his 103rd head coach, you know, within 3 years of five years of his career. Like, I will say this. I trust that Gentry is going to amp up the offense because he loves offense. Like, let's just get that out of the way first and foremost. Alvin Gentry is an offensive player's dream coach. I mean, he loves to run. He loves to get shots up. He loves to get buckets close to the basket. Theoretically, this should be the coach that De'Aaron Fox over the past couple of years has dreamed of playing under. So we'll see what happens. And if he somehow turns this team around, good. It doesn't, however, remove the larger issue at hand. Like, let's just get into it. Ownership is a problem. Ownership meddles. I mean, 1, 2, 3, Nick rocks. We all know it. It's dumb. And it's like, so I'm sitting here and I understand the Kings fans are trying to find the positives in firing Luke Walton and going, oh yeah, we can change our fortunes a little bit. But I'm also very much aware that all of those Kings fans in the back of their minds are going, but to what end though? Like, given the ownership, it's even if they find a good coach, there's no guaranteeing that that coach sticks around. Look at Mike Malone, who was there and who got unfairly fired for even a decent start. And it was because Bookie was sick. And like, there were so many dumb layers to it. Like, what, why should Kings fans feel at all any type of, what's the word I'm looking for here? Like, optimism, when you have an ownership like that, who just does not look at the situation with a nuanced view and just makes what feels like on the go decisions every single week.
You shouldn't. You have no reason to feel confident in this team. I mean, it's similar to what we were saying about Phoenix for a long time. Like, it just, there is a trickle-down effect, and if you can't trust the ownership group or the owner, if it's just one person, if you can't trust that person to be hands-off and defer to his basketball decision-makers, you're probably going to have a bad time. It's just as simple as that. So I think, going back to Walton for a second, you know, one of the things that drove both of us batty about him is that De'Aaron Fox is one of the quickest, most athletic point guards in the league. His first year under Luke Walton, the Kings were 20th in pace. They got up to 10th last season. So turns out having a really athletic point guard should run faster. And they started doing more three guard lineups with, you know, Hield, Fox, and Halliburton, which had some success. So they were showing signs of progress at some point, but at the same time, they finished with an identical 31-41 record each of the last two seasons. They haven't posted a winning record since the 2005-2006 season, which is coincidentally the last time they made the playoffs. So this is a 15-year playoff drought. And I'm going Sam Amick in this article, kind of, you know, the wave two-esque look of like, what's next for the Kings after Luke Walton's firing. You know, he said the Kings went into this season hell-bent on breaking that drought. So it's, to me, it's like a question of realistic expectations, because, you know, you've got Fox and Halliburton, both of whom, I know we'll get to Fox in a second, but, you know, Fox last year was an all-star caliber player. Halliburton was one of the best rookies in the league. Harrison Barnes is having a career year. Rashawn Holmes remains one of the most underrated centers in the league. Like, those four guys are good. However, their starting three spot has gone 12 starts to Maurice Harkless and 5 starts to Chimezie Metu. Like, neither one of those guys belongs in an NBA starting lineup for a team that is hoping to make the postseason. And so, like, this is where the Davion Mitchell pick was just so questionable, unless they had another plan. Like, one of these other guards was going to get moved this offseason, because, like, why do you need a fourth guard when you don't have threes at all? You just don't have forwards.
Right.
So this is where I, you know, like, okay, sure, maybe Alvin Gentry will get the offense to be more efficient. It's already 14th in the NBA. So that wasn't, defense is the bigger problem for them rather than offense. And again, not having wings is probably contributing to that to a large extent. So I don't know that changing coaches is going to fix the root issues here plaguing the Kings.
No, I don't think so either. I will say you can make up a lot of ground by being an elite offensive team, even if your defense struggles. And given that it's the Western Conference, I'm just open to the idea that they could sneak in if they become an elite offensive squad. Like, that's my logic behind it. That said, I mean, what are they right now? Like, 6-12.
Yeah.
That's rough. and you still have to figure out a new system on the run because Gentry is going to make some changes and hopefully they're going to pay off, but it won't be necessarily immediately. There are still guys trying to figure out their spot. Like you just said, like positionally, this team is not structured the way it should be. I even wrote an article on Forbes, I think a couple months ago or 1 month ago, where I basically took this issue up and said, you know what? It's time for the Kings to actually build a roster that has some structure to it, because they haven't for years and years and years. And I think that this all boils down to this conversation that we're about to have, you and I, which is, what's the play? Should the Kings continue going for the playoffs, or should they just rebuild? Now, I've heard people say that, oh, the fan base can't tolerate any more losing. The fan base wants immediate results. Like, I'm sorry, but I think that's a load of BS. I think that is just diminishing what the Sacramento Kings fan base is. I think you're speaking down to them because they are smart people. They know full well that even if you sneak into the playoffs via some sort of play-in tournament win, that is not necessarily a sign of sustainability. Right. That roster is still messed up. The organizational structure is still messed up. It might actually behoove you to start over once again and just like break everything into rubble and start all over. And then you have those people saying, well, do Kings fans have the patience for it? Yeah, I just think Kings fans want to see this done right. If that means a five-year process where you're all aligned and you go, okay, look, we know we've messed up, but we're starting over. We're doing this thing the right way. Vivek's influence is gone. We've made an agreement. Like, this is Monty McNair or maybe someone else. Like, maybe you switch everything around. Like, yeah. Maybe it's you also hire a brand new managerial team with the caveat that, look, Vivek, hands off. Just shut the F up and leave those people alone to do their jobs. Then I think Kings fans would be super hyped to just go into it like, okay, let's see what's up. Let's see what that happens. As long as there's a plan. Because right now, can you tell me what their plan is outside of, we want to make the playoffs because we haven't been there for 15 years?
Right.
What's the plan?
No, I can't. And I'll speak just from the Sixers process perspective of like, that's what was so appealing to Sam Hinkie. Like, he came in and he had a very clear long-term plan. And it wasn't just tank for draft picks. Like, he, you know, got a bunch of, he churned through guys on 10-day contracts or like undrafted free agents. He's, you know, acquiring like JaVale McGee for a pick, or, you know, like taking on bad salaries for extra picks. Like, he was strategic about the way he designed that roster. He wasn't wasting time like what Houston's doing with the Daniel Tice or Eric Gordon or anything like that. It was just all in on young guys. Let's churn through these guys. And maybe we find a Robert Covington or a TJ McConnell who have some sticking power. The Kings, it's just not, as you said, it's not clear what the long-term plan is or how they plan. Like, how do you plan to get the three that you're missing right now?
Right.
You're not going to get this guy. You're not going to get a star wing in free agency. No one is actively choosing the Sacramento Kings over another team that's offering an equal payday. So you can overpay for someone, but, you know, like, John Hollinger of The Athletic just put out a list of the top 25 free agents next year. It gets super bleak very quickly. So, you know, the free agent market is probably not a realistic option if you're going the draft route, unless you're drafting an older guy like a Chris Duarte, who's ready to come in and make an impact right away. He might be a couple years away from really hitting his stride. So is that aligned with especially the ages of Holmes and Barnes? Like, there is just, it's clear that they don't have a long-term 5-year plan of, here is how, not only do we get back to the playoffs, but here's, we're rebuilding, we get back to the playoffs, then we turn into a contender. It's just, I mean, I have no idea what the long-term vision is. So it's a fair question, Mort.
And I think, goal shouldn't be just playoffs. I mean, let's just be honest here. Wait, I am so tired of just hearing that. Like, as the primary goal, just let's get into the playoffs. Like, what? As an 8 seed that's going to be bounced in 4 games, are you satisfied going through like a 5-year period of being that team that gets bounced that way? No, like if you set your heights to just making the playoffs, you're coming in with no ambition whatsoever. I'm not saying, hey, it's championship or bust every single year. No, no, no. But I am saying that if you are serious, if you, regardless of where you are in your rebuilding plan or wherever you are in that stage, you have to look ahead and go, how do we take it from point A to point B and point B to point C to the point where we can become contenders for the championship? Because at the end of the day, that's what you're all fighting for. And the Kings just seem to be completely closed off to that, just going, eh, we'll settle. Like, it's fine. It's fine. Play in tournament? Sure. Win. Because we're frustrated and we're desperate. Like, how many desperate guys do you know who gets a date?
Right. So let's go into the big question for the Kings that Sam brought up. The sub-headline was, quote, the roster dilemma. And then the first paragraph was, is De'Aaron Fox still the right guy to build around? It's not looking that way at the moment. You know, Fox has taken a step backward. He averaged 25.2 points per game on 47.7% shooting last year. He's down to 19.9, 42.1 this year, shooting a career low 24.4 from three-point range. Assists are down, the lowest it's been since his rookie year. Rebounds as well. So Amick then added, if things don't improve anytime soon, with the Kings potentially falling even further out of playoff contention along the way, it'll be interesting to see the ripple effect on the roster by the time the Feb 10 trade deadline rolls around. So what do you make of all of that, Mort? Do you think, like, you know, all offseason, the Kings had been mentioned as one of the possible Ben Simmons suitors, but they had said De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Halliburton are off limits. Jake Fisher of Bleacher Report confirmed that this week after the Walton firing. He said both of those guys, the Kings still have both of those guys off limits. Do you think the Fox Halliburton backcourt is the answer long term, or are they going to have to consider moving off of one of those guys at some point?
I mean, it could be the future, but not as the primary thing. I mean, the thing is, it's really about what kind of players you have around those guys. Like, if you hit home on a draft pick of some superstar who comes in, thus turning Fox and Halliburton into secondary and tertiary options, that's fine. It's really about what kind of role you're playing. If De'Aaron Fox is your best player and you're relying on him to be, you know, your franchise guy, yeah, I mean, I could see how there's a ceiling to what you want to achieve. I'm not saying that he's not going to be one of the great point guards in this league. I think, if anything, it's ridiculous to put so much emphasis on 18 games this year compared to what he did last year and the year before. I mean, I heavily lean towards Fox being a good player compared to what he is right now. I just think it makes sense to pivot because, and don't get me wrong when I say this, Kings fans, but, like, understand my point here. This is the fifth year from De'Aaron Fox playing in this mess. You get tired. You get tired of having the stink of the Kings on you. Like, no, but you do. Like, yeah. Look, you, if you're De'Aaron Fox, you hear it. You hear everything. Of course you hear it. Like, can he win? What's going on with the ownership? What? Why are they changing coaches as the rest of us change underwear? Like, what is going on here? There's no stability on the roster. There's no stability in the front office. There's no stability in ownership. Like, everything is just weird. So I think it might even behoove some team out there who's like, oh, De'Aaron Fox is available? And he might actually could be had for cheaper than he could last year? Sold, because we just need to get him to a good team with a proper structure where he can actually relish in competence compared to what he's used to. I mean, that's how I'd look at it. But if I'm the Kings, I don't even presume to know what's going through their minds, because this is a team where ownership came in and said, should we play 4-on-5 basketball? Like, this is the team that we're talking about. I mean, would I want to trade De'Aaron Fox? No. Can I see why there's logic to doing it? Yeah, absolutely. Would I probably prefer doing it around the draft when I know where I land? I think so. Because then you can really make an educated guess on what your roster looks like next year. overall, I'm open to moving everyone on this roster if I'm the Kings. Of course, with the caveat again that you get new coaching staff, new management in there. And that's not a knock on Monty McNair. I just think you need to start fresh, and you need to do so also with the understanding that the Vivek Rana Dive does not interfere, which that's the first hurdle. And if you can't get past that, good luck, Kings fans. It's going to be a long, long decade.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with you that De'Aaron Fox should not be off limits. I'm not saying in a Ben Simmons trade necessarily, but like just in general, he's a really good player. Mm-hmm. There are very, very few players in the league who should be deemed completely off limits in any trade talks. I could probably list them on one hand.
Like, right.
It's Giannis, it's Luka, it's Steph, KD. That might be the list.
Wow, no LeBron.
He's 37.
No, I love it. I'm looking forward to, you had Kings fans on your ass the other day, and now it's going to be Lakers fans. It's all good.
Lakers fans are having a bad time this year. Like, you think Kings fans are down bad. At least Kings fans like know what to expect or are used to this right now. Lakers fans, I've just never seen them so fatalistic before. But
yeah, that's true. That is true. By the way, do you think OKC would make an interesting training partner for De'Aaron Fox? Because you would have like a Fox Shea backcourt.
What does OKC have to trade other than picks? A ton of picks?
Yeah, that's the idea. Like, that is under the assumption that the Kings decide, yeah, like let's blow it up, like let's just start all the way over.
Right. And I mean, they could offer Josh Giddey and some of the other young guys too.
That is like, true. Whatever like variety you find interesting. But just so there's the backcourt of Fox and Shea.
I think the difficulty is that from, again, based on what Sam Amick is saying, they don't want to do that. They don't want to rebuild. They want to compete for a playoff spot. Right. As you know, as nearsighted as that may be, we have to just go with the word trickling out from, you know, Kings camp right now. So like if they do end up trading De'Aaron Fox, I think it would be more like a star for a star type deal.
Right.
Than like De'Aaron Fox for like the James Harden, you know, a jillion draft picks and some like decent young guys.
No, but okay. You know what? Let's look at it through that framing that you just put in that they want to win. Right. Like they are right now, the Kings are where the Bulls were last year. Is that a fair assessment? Yeah. Okay. The Bulls gave up their young guys.
Yeah.
So that's Halliburton. That's Stavion Mitchell.
Right.
That is sticking with De'Aaron Fox, Harrison Barnes, Buddy Hield, and Rashawn Holmes. And then flipping your two high-priced point guards elsewhere for fit and veteran leadership.
And you have Marvin Bagley. Like, I don't care what – if they get the number 60th pick for Marvin Bagley, just flip him. You're not re-signing him. No one – like, everyone will call your bluff. Just get like
not use him as a salary filler,
right? Exactly. Like, yeah. You can attach him with Halliburton and get a bigger salary back, or attach him with Davion Mitchell. But I mean, I hear you. Like, if the Kings are serious about wanting to do that, that is the right play. The one that stands out to me, and we're gonna get to this team shortly anyway, is De'Aaron Fox for Jaylen Brown.
You know how I feel about Jaylen Brown. I would not do it if I'm Boston.
It's interesting, though, no?
No.
Really?
Again, I'm looking at it from Boston's point of view. I wouldn't find that interesting. For the Kings, I would be very interested. That would be fun. You would be better. But then again, if you're making that deal, you still have to figure out what to do with the young guys. Like, who is the most established point guard on the Sacramento Kings? That's De'Aaron Fox, hands down. So if you flip him for Jaylen Brown, okay, cool. Then you're kind of creating another problem, because Halliburton and Mitchell, neither of those guys are fully primed to take in that role yet. Like, then I would rather flip those two guys for established players who, won't necessarily be Jaylen Brown, but complementary pieces, however you want to describe it. And that's probably a small forward. Like, who? I can't tell you, because like I haven't done like the trade machine exercise for 4 hours where I'm sitting there and going, okay, let's identify the perfect guy. Like, right. I don't know. But I mean, if you just start with Fox, Hield at the, in the backcourt, Barnes at the four and Holmes at the five, find one guy who can slot into the three and you have a pretty structured starting lineup at least.
Yeah. I mean, I think the problem is like, that is just, you know, a two-way three is probably the most valued archetype in the league right now. So it's just really hard. Like, you can probably pry Robert Covington away from the Kings or from the Blazers, but like, it, I don't think that's changing the picture for you all that much. And I wouldn't give up Tyrese Halliburton for him. So like, I hear you on like, if, you know, if you do Fox for Brown and then you go to Halliburton as a full-time point guard, is he ready for that role already? Probably not. There's definitely going to be a learning curve there. But I don't know. I mean, I could see that being, and hell, the Kings can include more picks as well. And like, you know, Boston of all teams knows what happened. If you can get an unprotected first from the Kings, even a couple years down the road,
right?
Like it, that might be worth gambling on. I don't know.
I have a name. Okay. It's not a two-way guy, and you're going to say no. And I won't disagree with you necessarily.
Okay.
But this is a team that can't afford to say, well, we're not trading this guy because they're 3-16. What about Brandon Ingram?
That was the other guy that came to mind for me too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He can't be had for Halliburton and Mitchell and Marvin Bagley. Like, you would need, as you said, to attach several draft picks, unprotected, right, no less. But like, now we're getting into something that's interesting. Like, let's say the Pelicans bite on this, and I don't think they do. Like, make that a thing right off the top. That then you have Fox, Hield, Ingram, Barnes, and Holmes in the starting five. I mean, that's at least fun, right? And then you can round out the roster in the offseason using your, oh, I don't know if they get over the tax. They don't, I think. So they should still have their non-tax MLE, I presume.
I have not done the math on 2022 at all. I can't imagine they'd be over. I don't know how.
Because Holmes is on a freaking steal and Barnes is only $20 million. Yeah. No, they won't. They wouldn't. So they would have their non-tax MLE where they can get their Alex Caruso.
There you go. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking like at just a list of, you know, the best small forwards are going nowhere. Kevin Durant's going nowhere. Kawhi Leonard is going nowhere. Jimmy Butler's going nowhere. Like Tobias Harris, but he's not really even a small forward at this
point. Yeah, he's more of a four now.
Yeah, but like, the Sixers, I think, would be open to entertaining offers. Andrew Wiggins, Gordon Hayward. OG Anunoby, I don't think is going anywhere.
No. But you know what? Like, they want to win, right?
The Kings?
How about you go for someone who... Yeah, the Kings. But how about you go for someone who isn't necessarily a star, but who's just kind of a do-it-all guy who can really be your glue guy, like Kyle Anderson?
Now, that'd be interesting, because Lord knows Memphis is willing to take steps back this year.
Based on all their moves, I don't disagree. But no, I mean, at Kyle Anderson, I know he's not the answer, but I mean, you get someone in there who's like a 3-4, you know, multi-positional defender who has become a much better shooter in recent years, who can play make, like who can do a little bit of everything. Like, yeah, he's not going to blow you away. He's not going to pop for 39, but like, that's a decent guy to bring into that rotation, and he's pretty cheap, all things considered.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a good shout. The one other one that came to mind, and this is like the home run swing that could just completely blow up in your face.
Uh-oh. But
what if Denver is freaked out by what's going on with Michael Porter Jr.? And Sacramento is like, you know what?
Okay.
It's fine. We'll just do it. We'll take the gamble on his back.
Yeah, on a contract that hasn't even kicked in yet, right?
Right. So I think It would be poison pill would apply. It'd be much easier to pull this off next offseason than it would.
Right. But. Yeah, because that's when the contract is activated and then the poison pill is gone.
Yeah.
Oh, but could you imagine if he has this like perpetual back issue and is like only plays a couple games. Like if he essentially becomes Grant Hill in Orlando, where he plays a couple games here and there, and then now he's out for 20, plays five. Oh, now he's back out for 20 again. I like, if you're the Kings, especially where they are right now, do you even dare take such a risk?
No, I don't think they should.
Right.
I mean, this is where like we have to suss out how desperate they get. Like, are they willing to take that type of a gamble? Because, like, again, most of these guys, it's either stars who are going nowhere, or it's young guys like Mikal Bridges, who also just signed an extension, is going nowhere. You know, like, I'm sure they'd love to get Miles Bridges, but Charlotte's not going to give him up for cheap or at all.
No, they're probably going to max him.
Yeah, or, I mean, they're at least going to let him test restricted free agency and match presumably whatever he gets.
Yeah.
So then you're like, you can gamble on some young guys. Like maybe you call up Atlanta and go for a Cam Reddish or a DeAndre Hunter. But again, I don't know why. I don't think Atlanta, they are looking to consolidation trade. They're not looking to blow these guys up into multiple pieces as well. So all of this is to say, it's really difficult to say. I mean, like we talked about, what is the path forward for the Kings here? It's difficult to see one unless they do consider some widespread changes. So, we're going to talk a lot about guys who could be on the move either between now and the trade deadline or maybe next offseason, some star caliber players. I think De'Aaron Fox, even without Amick's report, I think the Walton firing and just where they are as a franchise, like he is definitely a name to keep an eye on.
Yeah. I agree.
So let's go in, since we brought up Jaylen Brown earlier, Mort, let's go into this just absolute godsend of a Tim Bontemps.
Oh, you're rubbing your hands already. Yeah.
Oh, it was I woke up, I checked Twitter, and I saw this when I logged on to work today, and I saw some excerpts of it come out. I was like, what is this amazing, amazing thing that has just dropped into my lap? So I want to read a couple of the highlights, and I encourage you all, if you haven't checked it out, to go read it, because there are just some truly brutal quotes in there from opposing scouts and opposing executives. One Western Conference scout said, Jaylen and Jason aren't making anyone better. I put that on them. An Eastern Conference executive said they've looked like players legitimately don't enjoy each other's success, and it's been like that for years. The fact that it's still rearing his head is not surprising in that regard. Eastern Conference assistant coach said Jason Tatum is about Jason Tatum. I don't think he cares about winning now, and if he does, it is on his terms. And then a Western Conference scout said, I would put it simply, Jason and Jaylen's ability to make other players better is crucial. If they can't get that third guy, meaning, get a third star in there somehow, they have to make other players better, and they haven't shown the ability to do that yet. Woo! It's just...
Yeah, I know. You have a semi. I know.
Lots to chew on there, Mort. So what do you make of all of this, given, the quotes that we discussed a couple weeks ago that came out from Marcus Smart, where he was... he said kind of along the same lines of like, we need these guys to become better playmakers. What we talked about a lot with Boston going into the season, they don't have a true point guard. I know Schroeder has been actually starting a lot of games for them and has been, he's almost 5 assists per game. Marcus Smart's at 5.4, but Tatum and Brown, both of them are down last year in terms of their playmaking. So
yeah, they're combining for 5.7.
Yeah. So like, how much fire is there behind all of this smoke that is coming out from Boston? We should note, they struggled to start the year, but they've actually seemed to kind of right the ship as of late.
Yeah, they have. This is criticism that we've heard for, I want to say, 2 years. I don't think there's anything new here. Here's my take on it. I think ultimately going the whole friendship route, or are they really like, are Jason and Jalen, are that like, are they buddy buddy? Are they compatible? I think that's just a lazy narrative, because you don't have to be best friends in order to win in the NBA. You don't have to be, you know, neighbors to compete for a championship. And I think both of them are super young. Like, I'm not at that point where, well, okay, Jalen is 25, so he's nearing his prime years, but I still think overall there are young players who are still trying to learn off of each other. I mean, Jalen started taking some leaps that weren't really expected. I mean, he became more of a scorer than anyone seemed to anticipate. And then I think that also, you know, caught Tatum for a loop a little bit. Like, I have to share the offensive responsibility now. I need to figure out how to best do that. There was one quote in the article that I really had a problem with. And that was, I think it was in this, see, I have the link somewhere. I think it was an Eastern Conference assistant coach. Yeah, I have it here. Who said about Tatum, he doesn't want to score 15 and win. He wants to score 39 and win. Like, yeah, 95% of the league wants to do that.
Right. Like, right.
How is that being used as something against him? Like, it's, name me an NBA player who'd rather score 15 points in a win than score 39 points in a win and get the headline. Like, that's such a belittling comment. Like, like, he should be satisfied. Like, no, I mean, that's not how it works for any player. So I think this was a bit of a hit piece. I trust their development. I do think they need a third one, like a third guy in there. I don't think it needs to be a star. I brought up Lonzo Ball as the perfect type of point guard to place alongside them. Someone who plays defense, gets the offense going, can hit threes, that kind of player. Someone who can really demand the attention on the ball when you need to. And just say, look, go in the corner, go in the opposite corner, come up and set a screen. Like, do these things. They need a proper point guard. And I understand they had Kemba. I understand they had Kyrie, but those guys were score first and score always. They need a traditional pass-first point guard who tells them where to go. Because, and I think Keith Smith, friend of the podcast, has pointed this out on numerous occasions. Like, neither Jason or Jalen are vocal leaders. Like, they are leaders who lead by example. They go out, they play their role, they put up their points, they get their rebounds, they play their defense, and that's it. That's great. Now you need the vocal leader, and that's just not Marcus Smart, because he doesn't have the necessary skill set to really come in and justify being a loudmouth.
Right.
You need to have someone out there who can really produce. Like, I know it's not realistic, but a Chris Paul would be a godsend to this team. That's the kind of kick in the ass player they need. So I would be against trading Jason and Jalen. I don't like that idea. And I think it's kind of ridiculous. If we go down that road, I think it's ridiculous that Jalen is the guy being sort of...
Yes.
No, but...
Yes. Give it to me.
All right. No, I'll say it. I think if you had to choose, I don't think Jason Tatum is automatically the guy you want to keep. Like, I don't understand why we're in that frame of mind. Jalen, to me, is the more reliable player. Like, he's become a so much better dribbler in recent years. I think he's by far the better defender. Offensively, I don't think he's that many steps behind. Yeah, I understand he's 2 years older, so there are some potential that's being left on the floor there that isn't a problem with Jason, because he's only 19, right? Still, isn't it? We agree, right?
Yeah,
still 19.
Right,
always 19. But I think Jalen, in some capacity, is a more well-rounded player, and I understand why the allure of Jason Tatum is still there. I love Jason Tatum, but I think if you're talking trade, I just don't understand why you kind of put Jason as this untouchable and are open to trading one of the game's best two-way players. Like, why is that?
Yeah, I would think it's because of the fixation, especially once you get in the playoffs, on individual shot creation.
Right.
I think that's one area where Tatum does have a pretty big advantage over Brown.
Is that advantage so big now? I mean, Jalen has gotten better in that department literally every single year.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it is. Maybe it's not as massive as it once was, but I would trust Tatum more in that capacity than I would Brown. But I mean, it's a fair point that, you know, again, like we talked about guys who should be off limits. When we were talking about De'Aaron Fox. I'm not saying they should be openly shopping either one of these guys.
Right.
Unless things are much worse behind the scenes than even this report today would suggest. In that case, maybe you do have to make a choice at some point, but
right.
You know, hopefully you just work things out behind the scenes and you continue to rock with these two guys, because as we just said, like this archetype is the most valued of any in the position in the league. So having two of them, you know, most teams would kill to have one player like this, and Boston has right. two. It's now just filling out the rest of the roster. And I thought Bontemps' article brought up a point that we've harped on both with Boston and Denver in recent years, where, you know, they have lost a lot of talent for
yep.
effectively nothing, like Kyrie Irving, Al Horford. You know, they signed and traded, did like a sign and trade nesting egg scheme, but, you know, it ended up with Josh Richardson. Like, you got a little bit of Evan Fournier and Josh Richardson, and then they still have, I believe, a sizable trade exception. So we'll see what, if anything, comes of that. But, you know, losing Kemba Walker as well, Terry Rozier, which we didn't look at as a big loss at the time, but how he's developed since leaving Boston, yeah. You know, they could really use a Terry Rozier right now. And like, you know, Dennis Schroeder has been playing really well for them. He's been a nice pickup. Like, getting him on that 1 year mid-level exception was great, but he's only on a 1 year deal. So what happens next summer? Like, are they able to retain him? Cause it's not going to be like, they'll have, I don't even know if they have a full non-taxpayer mid-level or if they're just at the taxpayer, but like,
and way, is he even the point guard that they need? I understand he's yeah. playing well, but is he even someone that you want to pair long-term with Tatum and Brown? I don't know.
That's also a fair question. So it's, you know, I do not want to conflate the Kings and the Celtics when I'm saying, like, what's the long-term plan here? Because the Celtics, it could very easily just be, we're keeping Tatum and Brown. We'll figure out the rest of the roster as we go along. We really like Marcus Smart. We just signed Robert Williams. You know, we have Al Horford for another year. Like, they're in a much, much, much better place than the Sacramento Kings are. But, yeah, there are still some, like, major roster construction questions that they need to answer.
Yeah.
Starting with the point guard spot, or, you know, can Tatum and Brown take steps forward as playmakers so much so that they can lean on those guys and do similar to what the Clippers are with Paul George and Kawhi, where it's like, okay, we don't need a traditional point guard. We need like a score first. Reggie Jackson is actually, you know, the perfect point guard for that team, because we don't need to put the ball in his hands on every possession. He can just be this catch and shoot 3-point outlet. You know, Schroeder, for as well as he's playing, is not that type of a player. So,
right.
You know, how do they find that third guy, or who is that third guy, I think is an open question for Boston. But I'm just going to, like, for all of the years that we've had Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid stories and how much they hate each other and how you have to break it up, I'm going to really savor the tables being turned on Boston fans for even a little bit. It's just, what a great Thanksgiving present.
I will say this. It is weird that when you have Tatum and Brown, who's played with each other for however many years at this point, five? This is their fifth year together,
yeah, I right? believe this is their fifth year.
Yeah. That there does seem to be less chemistry between the two. And again, I want to reiterate, I don't think that chemistry is necessarily the one thing that leads to a championship. I also think you need a structural roster around you. But it is noteworthy that they still don't seem to be on the same page, as seamless as DeMar DeRozan and Zach LaVine, where DeRozan is a new arrival. Like, if you catch my drift, like, you know, you would almost anticipate, oh, with a new guy coming in, you know, the two guys have to figure each other out and like test each other out. It seems like we're on year five with these two still trying to figuring out entirely where to be and whatnot. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, because, like I said, Jaylen Brown exploded offensively to the point where Tatum had to give up some ground and say, oh, okay, you know what? That's cool. I need to adjust my game a little bit, because now we have two guys who can score the basketball. We have two guys who can defend at a high level. That's a good problem to have in trying to figure that out. But I'm also sitting there looking at my clock once in a while going, So when are you guys going to figure this out? Like, when are you guys going to take this next leap and become the two superstars that you need to become, where it almost doesn't matter who you put around you, who's put around you, because you can still carry this team to like 55 wins. And I don't think that's happening. I don't think that constellation necessarily is going to work that way. I think they need a vocal leader. They need someone to come in and just scream their heads off at them.
Yeah. Well, they have Marcus Smart.
Someone good. No, I'm kidding. Someone who's no, I mean, I'm kidding, but it's honestly like a fair point. I mean, Smart is obviously a fantastic defender and all that. He's improved as a three-point shooter and all those things, but he's just not a traditional point. Like,
yeah,
well, he doesn't have the basketball smarts.
You brought up Chris Paul earlier. Like,
yeah,
he is that type of light a fire under your ass, but he's also a Hall of Fame point guard, so you have to like, he might really piss you off when he does it, but you have to respect it. Or even Jimmy Butler. Like, Jimmy Butler sets a tone culturally with his work ethic and his vocal leadership. And, you know, I think he's all the, like, him dribbling a ball at three and all that BS is corny, but, like, I think there is something to it as well. So,
oh, yeah, there is. I mean, he's corny, but he's not lying. I mean,
right. So like, are Tatum and Brown those types of leaders? Yeah. And that isn't to say that they can't develop into that, especially for young guys who get thrown into a mix where, you know, they get added to a team that's making Eastern Conference Finals after Eastern Conference Finals when they're that young. And now the team gets turned over to them because Kyrie and all these guys leave. Like, of course, there's going to be like a transition period where they're trying to figure this thing out and figure out the balance and like who is the top dog. Like, they should just be fine sharing co-billing as top dog and have everything else fall in from there. But I you know, I think it's probably just a matter of time and patience for the Celtics. So I don't expect any big changes this year for them. Okay. I will be curious if, especially if they don't, like, maybe they make the playoffs and don't make it out of the first round or something like that. Does that cause a bigger reevaluation next offseason? I think that's probably the time where we need to circle back and be like, okay, now what's the plan?
No, especially, I still think you should stick with those two. They're too talented. I mean, they're just too good. And honestly, like, in terms of the fact that they aren't friends and may not have the chemistry and all that, like, okay, but is it to the point where they are, you know, effectively upset at one another for stealing each other's spotlight? I don't think so. Like, this isn't a Shaq Kobe situation at all. Like, I'm just not worried necessarily about those two and their individual chemistry, even though I do raise the question of why they don't have better on-court chemistry at the least after so many years together. That does seem weird. But I also think they're just trying to figure each other out. And it's the talent, Brian. That's what I keep coming back to. Like, if you trade Tatum, you need to get an absolute haul back. If you trade Brown, you need to get an absolute haul back. And then you kind of start that process again. Like, oh, okay, new team, new thing. Like, there is that steady levelness of having those two. Like, those are known commodities. You know what you're getting out of them. Maybe that's actually a good thing. Like, you know that they're you can circle them in for 25 points apiece, 5-plus rebounds, plus defense. They get to the line. They hit threes. Like, you know what you're getting. So it's all about creating a roster around that and saying, okay, here's what we know. But we don't know jack about Peyton Pritchard, Aaron Nesmith, and Romeo Langford, all those guys. We don't know that. So if we turn all those question marks into certainties, into facts, into players who we know, who have been in the league for a long time, maybe that changes the entire course. I understand the problematic here. I will not entertain legitimately moving off of Tatum Brown until it's absolutely necessary. It's just too big of a risk.
So next summer. Yeah. Okay, great.
Ironically, by the way, you know what kind of would bridge those two guys? And it's impossible because you can't get him without relinquishing one of them, but that's Ben Simmons. Not saying that Ben Simmons is a guy in a point guard who goes out and says, hey, come on, work, because the guy doesn't even work on his own offense. But I think having that high utility guy who can handle the basketball, play obviously great, great defense, who can get the transition going, like, I think that would do it. I think that would be that piece. But how the hell do you get a Ben Simmons without giving up one of those two guys? You just don't.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's actually a great place for us to transition more into a bigger picture look. Now that we've hit Fox and Jaylen Brown, obviously Ben Simmons is still on the market as well. Going back to Sam Amick of The Athletic, he had a report last week about, you know, where things stand with the Simmons saga, and nothing has changed. Nothing's new. It's not going to get resolved, at least
until December. So we don't have to talk about it?
No, well, no, we're not about Ben in particular, but there is one nugget in there that caught my eye, and I think it can, you know, lead to a larger discussion. He said a source with knowledge of the list said there are approximately 30 players who would satisfy the Sixers in the Simmons swap, and there is an internal belief that a fair amount of them, let's say 5 to 10, could become available in the next year or two. So that's interesting, because, you know, I was talking with a Sixers guy the other day, and we were like, so who's on this list of 30? Like, does he include, like, Giannis and Luka and guys who you just know are not going anywhere?
Right.
Or, is, you know, do you knock that tier out, and is it...
Is it a realistic list, is what you're asking?
Right. Yeah, because then I think the list of 30 would include some names that we might not expect. So who do you think more... You know, if we're talking about guys, I want to focus on, you know, that that group of 5 to 10 who could become available in the next year or two, not necessarily just from the Sixers perspective, but who do you think might fit into that mold of, like, star caliber players who we should be keeping an eye on, much like Fox, much like potentially Tatum or Brown, who for whatever reason might become available in the trade market sooner than we might expect.
So star caliber or stars? Because there's a difference.
We could start with stars and work our way down.
Oh, okay. But stars are included here. Is your thing?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, obviously, the guys that we've talked about over the past couple months, like Karl-Anthony Towns, Pascal Siakam, because we put them in connection with Golden State on several occasions. Mm-hmm. So I think those could be it. I think Fred VanVleet as well could be in play, because if you move off of Siakam, you're probably moving off of VanVleet as well, I would imagine. Mm-hmm. And then you're kind of pivoting into the youth movement there in Toronto. Who else? Who else stands out as someone who... Well, the Lakers suck, so Anthony Davis. No.
Russell Westbrook, I'm sure they would be happy to move on.
Russell Westbrook, if Russell Westbrook is on that list, I mean,
oh God, no,
that would be the surprise of my life. Yes. No, but I think we have to look at teams that are failing to meet expectations right now. So I think De'Aaron Fox, who we've talked about, probably is on that list. I won't bring up guys on like the Houston Rockets or Oklahoma City Thunder, because in the grand scheme of things, they aren't struggling. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing. Not right. Winning.
Since you brought up Fox, I do want to, you know, mention this earlier about, you know, Zach Lowe had a podcast with Kevin Arnovitz where he talked about the Kings in detail. And he did say, given how well Tyrese Maxey has been playing for the Sixers in the absence of Ben Simmons this year, he said he wasn't sure even if the Kings relented and say, you know what, fine, we'll do Fox for Simmons. He wasn't sure that the Sixers would say yes. What did you think of that?
No, I get it. So De'Aaron Fox is the better player. And based on that, you kind of go, what? Why not? But you have to take into account contract and age. And right now, I'm just going to look this up to be absolutely sure I'm not wrong on the on the numbers. Okay, so De'Aaron Fox actually did have a better sophomore year than what Tyrese Maxey is currently having, because he was just that much more of an efficient passer and a more influential defender. But it's not far off. It's not far off at all. And I project Maxey to be the better shooter when everything is said and done. He's certainly the better ball handler. Is he going to be a less dynamic passer? Probably. but I don't think that's necessarily a problem. So I can see the logic in retaining Tyrese Maxey. By the way, if you're on Twitter or on a forum, like wherever, and you are coming up with NBA trades and you're using Tyrese Maxey as a throw-in or as a good young piece, you need to check yourself, because Tyrese Maxey right now has enormous trade value. Like, don't get it twisted. Tyrese Maxey right now, if you're looking solely off of a list of who has highest trade value in the NBA, he's in the higher higher tiers. Like, you won't find him like in the middle of the pack there. The contract, the production, the age, are you freaking kidding me? He is not a throw-in. He's not a good young piece. He's a foundational piece. And Philly lucked the hell out in getting him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could just tell based on the way Maury talked about him last year, Doc talked about him last year, because I saw this a lot over the summer, and even dating back to last trade deadline, when, you know, Kyle Lowry, the Sixers were reportedly going after Kyle Lowry, and some reports that they did offer Maxey as part of that deal, and Toronto wanted, I think, like Maxey and Thybulle and two picks, and Danny Green would have had to be included for salary matching. Like, teams might have had their chance to get Maxey, and that isn't to say that he's completely off limits now, because I think if Portland calls up tomorrow and says, we'll do Dame for Maxey and Simmons, I think Maury loops that into a three-way call with the league office, like, does not let Portland get off the phone. But yeah, you're not getting Maxey now unless it is for a star caliber player in conjunction with the Simmons trade. I totally agree with that. And, you know, to Lowe's point, I think, like, my favorite Kings construction is not around Fox, it's around the other guys. So, like, Halliburton, Barnes, Hield, that group, and then Simmons and whichever other pieces you need to make that, like Simmons, Green, and Springer, or Bassey, or Isaiah Joe, whoever is in that mix. I think that makes more sense. But, yeah, I think the Kings are an obvious potential destination or potential trade spot. The Pelicans you brought up earlier, Brandon Ingram, I think, just assuming they aren't willing to move off Zion, assuming they're willing to do whatever it takes to make Zion.
Oh, Williams man. Happy. So Ben Simmons and Zion Williamson at the same team?
No, I'm not saying bet for a Ben trade. I'm just saying in general, I think Brandon Ingram is available.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. I thought you were proposing a Ben for Brandon. Ingram. Because I was like, could you imagine the media mill of a Simmons Zion team?
Oh, the spacing. Could you, like, with Ben, Zion, and Jonas Valanciunas together?
And then you'd have some people come in and say, whoa, they're both left-handed, and that adds 5 points per game for both. Like,
Yeah, I mean, I know JV has been hitting threes at a decent clip this year, but that would be a spacing disaster. So, I am just saying, in general, I would not be surprised if Ingram is available.
Agreed. I also wouldn't be surprised if there's a player who's available very soon as well, who we haven't talked a whole lot about, even though we have talked about potential trades involving him. That is Domantas Sabonis.
Yeah. Yeah,
I think he could be available by this summer.
That Pacers team is very confusing.
It really is. Everyone is putting a lot of stock into the fact that they just smacked the Bulls by 32, but the Bulls were playing their seventh game in 10 days. Like, I don't think you can put a lot of stock into that. But, I mean, this team is just, you're right. It's weird. I mean, you have games where they literally look like they could be in the bottom tier of the league. Like, at the very, very low, like Orlando Magic, Detroit Pistons tier. And then there are games where they look like a fully fledged playoff performer. It is super weird. And I think unless they figure that out, it's time for some changes come summer.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've had the Sabonis Miles Turner question is about as tiring to Pacers fans as the Simmons and Embiid questions were to Sixers fans. And at some point, you would expect a shoe to drop there. I mean, I guess, TJ Warren has yet to return from his injury. It sounds like he's going to be back in December or January, but he's going to be a free agent this summer. So That's another name to keep an eye on. Like Brogdon, they can't trade now until next summer because they signed the extension. But yeah, just Indiana in general as a team to monitor leading up to the trade deadline. Like what one of those three has to go, I would think. Turner, Sabonis, or TJ Warren. I just can't imagine they're going to keep all three around.
Colin Sexton is probably on that list too.
Yeah, but I mean, now he's got the torn meniscus. He's out for the rest of the year. He's a restricted free agent. Like, you know, you'd be acquiring him for his matching rights at this point.
Right, exactly.
I don't know that he has a ton of trade value since he's going to be out all year. And, you know, Cleveland at that point can just say, okay, we'll just match and then we'll trade him after.
Yeah. And furthermore, like, you kind of want to go for it if you're Philly this year.
Yeah.
Like, let's just be honest, because we've talked about this before. We don't know what Joel Embiid is going to look like in a couple of years. Like, you want to make this one of the years where you go all in for it and try to win that damn ring. Minnesota is also a little bit weird because, like, we talked about Cat, but that's not going to make sense.
And right now, Minnesota is, you know, they won four straight. They're the 10th seed in the West. Like, I think this is what's going to be tricky about this trade deadline. The West, you know, like, I don't think I think we'll slip out of the playoff picture. The Spurs aren't going to make the playoffs. The Rockets are obviously not going to make the playoffs. Yeah. The Pelicans, depending on when Zion comes back, maybe they get back into the play-in mix, but they might be in too far of a hole. So, like, you know, that's 3 to 4 teams that you can pretty much write off already. So they're just... You could talk yourself, even if you're the Kings right now, you'd be like, all right, yeah, we're the 12th seed, but, you know, four of these teams, we don't expect to be competitive in terms of actually trying to make the playoffs. So we have to beat one team. And like Denver is, you know, losing bodies left and right. The Lakers are just dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. The Timberwolves are still the Timberwolves. Like if we jump one of those teams, we're in. And then in the East, it's like, you know, there are 11 teams right now that are 500 or better. So, you know, I think we have to wait till we get closer to the trade deadline to see if that holds true. But like, it's just so competitive that right now that again, like every team that isn't Orlando or Detroit can talk itself into, yeah, sure, maybe we can make the play-in. So
it,
like, does that
it sucks for Philly that both the Bulls and Wizards are good.
Yeah, I wanted to hit. Let's jump to Beal and LaVine because I think you know those have been the two that have been mentioned just, you know, for years now.
Let's just get it out of the way. Philly fans, especially this summer before the Bulls started upgrading, had major boners on for Livy.
Oh, yeah.
That was the guy. And it makes total sense because Livy into that system.
Right.
Oof. Like, are you kidding me? Him feasting off of Embiid and Tobias Harris and Seth Curry? Good Lord.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but I mean,
he's not going anywhere.
He's not going anywhere. Beal, same deal, not going anywhere. I mean, so those are two major, major potential chips that are off the market. And like, hell, even if you go to Charlotte, I know that you hated this idea, but like Gordon Hayward, I mean, would be very win now-ish for the Sixers. Yeah. But they're playing very good basketball. Like, I just don't know where to go look for a guy who fits. Like, the guys that you need in both conferences are mostly in the playoff picture and are doing very well. And that's not a coincidence. So it's kind of forced your hand with Simmons in having to identify the lower level teams or lower seeded teams and kind of going, okay, let's scourge through this garbage and see if there's something there. There just isn't. I mean, unless you want to go with, you know, potential players. But like, again, what does that help you this year? It doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, there's the Spurs package of Vassell, Thad Young, DeJounte Murray, or Derek White. Like, you know,
But is that on the table?
From what I've heard from Sixers folks, the Spurs have not offered anything that has really interested them yet. So I don't know if the Spurs have even offered those types of guys or if those types of guys are on the list. But you're right. Like, if they are really holding out for one of these 30-ish players, it might not happen this year. Like the Jazz, I could see if the Jazz flame out again, do they start to consider breaking up Gobert and Donovan Mitchell? And like Donovan Mitchell would be a great upgrade, but
where are they going to get their scoring if they trade Donovan Mitchell for Ben Simmons? Like, oh my God, that would be horrendous.
Yeah. So, you know, like the Mavericks, I would like to add Jalen Brunson, but I would not like to add Kristaps Porzingis. So I don't know where they're going to get, like, I guess Brunson and Tim Hardaway.
Are you sure that you don't want KP right now, though?
I know he's been playing very well. But the injury history compounded with Embiid, and then also,
yeah,
you know, he plays like, how do you fit Tobias, KP, and Embiid all together?
Yeah, it's a lot of size.
Yeah,
it's a lot of shooting too.
It is, and I mean that isn't to say that the Sixers should not also be open to moving off of Tobias, like if they can swing that type of a deal, and then you know. Trade Tobias for other depth. I don't know. I mean, it's increasingly difficult to figure out who would be realistic targets on the list of 30. I think, you know, hitting Cat is the obvious one. Siakam, sure, because like Raptors Twitter seems to have completely turned on him for whatever reason.
I think the Caius Duncan, friend of the podcast, said it best. There is a Toronto Raptors civil war going on right now.
Yeah. I do want to hit on two other names, one of whom came up recently. Keith Pompey of the Philadelphia Inquirer reported that I don't know who approached who, but Jeremy Grant's name came up in conjunction with Ben Simmons. Now, Kyle Newbeck of Philly Voice shot that down, said the Sixers are not interested, have not been interested. But what do you think about Jeremy Grant just as a potential? You know, maybe he is one of these guys who gets moved in the next year or two, because he, I believe, has just 2 years, like this year and then next year, and he's a free agent in 2023.
I think the Sixers could have saved themselves a lot of time by just hanging on to him.
Sure.
No, I mean, he's a good player. I just wonder how he fits into the grand scheme of things. Like, if you have those reservations that you do about Kristaps Porzingis, you should have those same reservations about Jeremy Grant, because he's going to come in at the four, presumably, and that's going to push down Tobias, who has developed into a four. And is Tobias going to be targeted relentlessly by opposing wings? Yes, very much so. So I don't know. It's not without its merit, I will say as much. And the fact that you now have playmaking in Maxi does make it so that you don't really need a guard back necessarily for Simmons, even though it's still preferable. I get that. It's still preferable to get a guard back, but the need has lessened. It is so difficult for me to find like the right path here. I would pull the trigger, but also I'm not a Ben Simmons believer. I'm sorry. Right. I mean, I don't think that Ben Simmons raises your ceiling. I think, in fact, he closes it off. I think he raises your floor to a certain level, which is fun and great. And then I think he caps your ceiling extremely hard because, you know, he doesn't want to shoot.
Right.
I realize that's the most simplistic analysis. Nevertheless, it's true. I mean, we don't have to go into like a 10,000-word dissertation going through it. Like, if you don't want to shoot and if you're passing up open shots and if guys can leave you, you are effectively playing 4-on-5 basketball, which is exactly what the Kings wanted in the first place. So you know what, maybe that's the play
there. You go. Maybe that's the Maury just needs to get on the phone, be like, hey, V-back.
But the one guy I want to bring up, the one guy, and I realize he's not available, I realize that if you were to make a play for him, it would cost all of your draft picks, and because Kawhi would get pissed. But that's the guy for me. Like, if that's Kawhi, the guy,
Paul George.
No, Paul George. So because Kawhi would be pissed about losing the guy he wanted in LA. It's Paul George.
Okay.
He's not available. He's not available. No. I understand that. I mean, if this was an NBA 2K simulation, like the entire Clippers front office would have gone down and labeled him as an untouchable. I understand. But that's the guy for me. Like, if there's a if there's a player out there who presumably should have been a little bit attainable and you're willing to throw the kitchen sink at him, that's him. Because he solves your playmaking issues. He comes in as a shooter. He's a defender. He can attack any type of coverage you can. There is. He'll play magnificently off of Joel Embiid, in my opinion, because he's never had that dominant a big to play off of before. Mm-hmm. And the space that he would have in that is amazing. He would have Seth Curry spotting up on the wing. There's just, that's the guy for me. And I don't think he's attainable. And I think he would have been more attainable if the Clippers had absolutely sucked, but they don't.
Right. Yeah. They he also solves their closer issue.
Yes, he does very much.
Yeah.
That's the guy for me.
If I guess the only way the Clippers would be amenable to it is if they say, like, look, you know, Kawhi's out. We're not going anywhere this year. We might as well get younger. But, you know, didn't he just sign a multi-year extension there, right?
Like and Kawhi did too. Like, Kawhi would get pissed. Kawhi would ask for a trade. Everything would go haywire. So I don't think it's
– yeah.
I don't think it's realistic.
It's a good shout as, like, at least an archetype to target, if not – Paul George.
An archetype that's extremely rare.
right. Yeah. A top 15 player, you know.
Yeah. No, you just need a top 15 player. Right.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up the point about Maxey too, because I actually wrote more in detail at Forbes about that. So I'll retweet it from the pod account after we send this episode out.
Nice.
If you guys want to check that out. But you're right. Like, that was one of the questions going into the season. Do they need a ball handler specifically in return for Ben, or could Maxey handle this role? And you brought it up earlier, but, you know, like, Maxey and Ben are two very different players. They're like, Maxey is not nearly as prolific of a passer as Ben. He's not going to have as many assists as Ben. He's also not going to have as many turnovers. He is much more of a score first point guard. Ben is a pass first something like point guards, power forward, point forward. I don't care about the positional label there. But, like, Maxey is, you know, more of a dribble drive threat. So he has fared well enough in that role to start this season that you can say, okay, maybe, you know, if it is a star for star swap, maybe we don't need a ball handler in return. Because honestly, there aren't many obvious options available. Like,
right.
Dame, you know, add Dame to the list of the Beal and Levines. Like, not that Portland is playing that well, but it just seems like they have no interest in moving him. If or when he asks out, that will change. But until then, they're going to wait for him to hold a gun to their head saying, trade me, before they are willing to actually do it. I did want to bring up one other name before we go. And again, this is not the Sixers should trade for this guy, because he actually makes no sense for them. But it is a former Sixer in Christian Wood.
Oh, yeah. Hey, you've been banging this drum for a while. Go ahead, man.
I know, and you're right. I have been banging this drum for a while, but I actually saw a member of Rockets Twitter the other day, one of our former Forbes colleagues, the guy who runs Red 94, also brought this up. And the whole idea is, like, where the Rockets are as a team, they're just, you know, very, very early stages of a rebuild. They're not going anywhere this year. They're not going anywhere next year, realistically. Christian Wood is signed for two more years at a dirt cheap price.
Yeah.
And then he's going to be a free agent. And at that point, like, by the time the Rockets get even remotely relevant again, you're going to have to re-sign Christian Wood, and probably for a lot more money than what he's earning right now. So do you look to cash in? Like, because I think one of the things that's been problematic about Houston so far is it's similar to, you know, the Sacramento, where it's like, all right, we know the long-term plan is built around the kids, but why is Christian Wood leading the team in minutes? Why is Eric Gordon playing 28.5 minutes per game? Why is Daniel Tice even on this team?
Yeah, on the roster, yeah.
But, like, why is he averaging 20? Why is he playing more than Sengun? Like, it makes no sense. So I just wonder, as the losses continue mounting, and Jake Fisher, a Bleacher Report, just put out a piece today and said, you know, people around the league are starting to wonder if Steven Silas, their head coach, is the next one to get fired. Like, come January, come early February, if the Rockets are 3-35 or whatever the case may be, you know, do they say, like, Christian Wood is, you know, on that contract especially, is a hell of a value. Like, you should easily be able to get at least one first round pick, if not more, for him. Like, is it time to cash in?
He might be a good option for Boston.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's not the point guard that I referenced before, but he's a super reliable big. And I understand they have Robert Williams, but I mean, Christian Wood can actually shoot.
I mean, I can't tell if Warriors fans or Rockets fans are going to get more angry about this idea.
Uh-oh.
Jordan Wouldn't Poole? He be at a great fit with Golden State? And would Golden State be willing to offer Wiseman in return?
Oh, Wiseman. Well, that's not fair, man. Now they already have Şengün and they have Usman Garuba. Now you're
bringing in Wiseman? Maybe you...
Kuminga, man.
Yeah, well, I was looking just for the salary matching
perspective of it,
but
but Kuminga would fit better. I mean, just in terms of their need.
That's true. Find any of the kids, I don't care.
All right. Yeah. Just basically get Christian Wood to Golden State.
Yeah. Like, I would think Golden State would be willing to, especially given how well they've started the year, now that they look ostensibly like title contenders.
It's interesting because, like, we have brought up Karl-Anthony Towns as a potential Golden State target.
Yeah.
But, and, like, Christian Wood is, like, 40% of what Karl-Anthony Towns is. 50%, maybe. But he's also on, what, less than 50% of the
contract? right. Yeah.
Like, 40% of the contract?
Yeah.
I wouldn't hate that. And surely the Warriors wouldn't either. They could use a guy who's cheap in the next couple of years.
And the other team that stands out to me is Dallas.
Oh, yeah. Wait, who, though? Like, what's the deal?
Yeah, I know. That's the problem.
Right? The Mavericks don't have anything. They don't have anything. Yeah.
They have, like, the salary matching pieces, but
they're not attractive.
Like, yeah, right. Like, Dwight Powell, Maxi Kleber, Reggie Bullock. It would have to be one of those three guys as the salary match. Yeah. And then, like, I don't think you're giving up Jalen Brunson, although that would be – if they were willing to do, like, Jalen Brunson and Dwight Powell for Christian Wood, the Rockets would be insane to say no. I don't care that Dwight Powell is going to be your third string center.
Yeah, but I mean, God, I would hate that for Dallas. But
I would too.
But then again, you also just need guys who are, you know, able to produce now. Because Lucas now, he's not a future player. He's a now player, even though he's only 22.
And if you're Dallas and you're worried, you know, Jalen Brunson is going to earn a pretty hefty payday.
Yeah, you're right. Oh, God.
He's going to be an unrestricted free agent too. So this would be more a hedge against the risk of
that makes me hate it less.
Okay. I mean, like,
that makes me hate it less. Yeah.
I agree with you. Like, they should not want to trade Jalen Brunson. They should want to re-sign Jalen Brunson. This should not be a discussion. But if they think Jalen Brunson is getting 4 years, 80 or 90 million, and they aren't willing to go up to that next summer.
And he is. He is. Yeah. Because look at the free agents this year.
Yeah. He should. I mean, the only thing working against him is that very few teams have a lot of cap space, but the ones that do
are bad. Sign and trade, man.
Yeah, that too. But, like, the ones that do are bad, and he's still young enough that you can, like, they should be going after him.
Yeah. That might actually be a very good idea, because you get some team control there in Christian Wood. And you also get a guy who is tailor-made for Luka Doncic in Wood, though.
Yeah. Where, I mean, hell, let me see if I could figure out. Oh, actually, Charlotte.
Who? What's your thinking?
They could do Plumlee or Kelly Oubre is on a matchable contract and then include Book Knight in a pick.
Now that's interesting. Getting Book Knight and a pick. Like the rest of the components, I don't give a damn about. Like
pick your salary matching chip. We don't care. It's not gonna be Miles Bridges. Right. You're not getting
right.
But yeah, one of Oubre and Plumlee and Book Knight, and you know, I don't think it would be an unprotected pick, but even if it
that
is,
that would be one of the best offensive lineups in the East.
Yeah. Like LaMelo, Rozier, Howard, Bridges, Christian Wood.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there are enough teams that should be interested in Christian Wood. He's on a cheap contract, so it's easy to salary match for him. It's not like John Wall, where we need $45 million in matching salary. Like, hashtag free John Wall. All right. Take a $20 million off in a buyout, and you can play wherever you want. You know, like Christian Wood is – Christian Wood's cheap. Like, he is very – he should be very readily attainable. So, you know, if we're talking about – again, this is not for Sixers specific because they have Joel Embiid. Like, they're not going to go after him. But he is a guy we think a lot of teams should have interest in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that a lot of teams have – the ability to acquire him based on, like, they can shuffle their, you know, fourth or fifth starter for the salary match and then include a pick or include a prospect or both.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't hate that.
Yeah. He is just a guy. It's going to physically pain me if he is on that Houston roster on February 11th.
I have one more guy before we wrap up to kind of solve some of Philly's issues, because, like, let's assume it's Tyrese Maxey and Seth Curry in the backcourt, and you have the fixed positions of Tobias and Joel up front, right? So it's mm-hmm. it's the three, the traditional three.
Yeah.
So whenever we send Ben Simmons out in trades, we always kind of pigeonhole him as a three in Minnesota and Sacramento. So I'm just going to reverse psychology this thing. Why not Ben at the three in Philly? Why not make amends? Why is that not on the table? Why not just...
Did you see Kevin O'Connor had a piece about this the other day?
No, I actually didn't.
Well, it was more like they wanted him to be kind of their version of Draymond.
Right.
So now that Maxey has broken out to the extent that he has...
Yeah.
Why not just do that?
Yeah. That honestly, that might actually be the best possible solution to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that it's not going to happen. I'm clearly making a joke here, but at the same time, I want to be serious about it because it makes sense. Like, they just need to have this, both of them have to come to Jesus moment where they're like, where they have to look each other in the eyes and go, are we actually each other's best option? Yeah, I think we are. Damn it. I know. Should we do it? Yeah, screw it. Go ahead. Yeah. I'm back. And then he has to fax out to all the media outlets.
Oh, God. I mean...
No, but I mean, it's just so funny to me that Philly are essentially trying to solve the issue of Ben Simmons by finding a guy who plays like Ben Simmons.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't think he is realistically going to return to Philly. I don't think he's ever going to play another game in a Sixers uniform. But I agree with you. If he was willing to come back, it could make sense for both teams or both sides. Like,
that team would look so different now because they now have, you know, dribble drive basketball in Maxey, and they have the shooting component of Seth. Like, you can maybe make the argument now that because they have those two guys, Ben in a lesser offensive capacity role might not put as hard of a cap on the ceiling as I alluded to previously. Like, maybe at the end of the game, should just kind of say, okay, we just don't go to Ben.
Right. Yeah. Like, you could stagger. The problem is, like, does Ben start still? And who do you move? Do you move Danny to the bench? Do you move Seth to the bench? But you can, like, move Ben to the bench early, keep Maxey in there, bring Ben back with mostly second unit guys, and just let him bum slay.
Right, exactly. And then when it's the 5 minutes left in the game, it's a close game, you sit Ben's ass down.
Yeah, which is why, by the way, he will never come back to this team.
But then he has to fix it. Like, and then he has to fix his own game. I'm sorry. Right. I mean, if that, because that's going to be the case in Minnesota or Sacramento or wherever the hell he goes, that's going to be the same story.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad we had this talk, because Lord knows, you know, we're less than 3 months until the trade deadline. This chatter is only going to increase after December 15th, which is when guys who signed this summer can become eligible to be traded. So there will be a lot of trade talk in the coming weeks and months, and we will follow it very closely, praying to whatever God you believe in that this Ben Simmons thing is over by February 10th, or I might seppuku myself on this podcast, live on this podcast.
This is the second reference to seppuku for today.
I know.
Okay, wow.
All right. Well, that's a good place to wrap things up. So thank you all, as always, for listening today. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bios to give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. We're being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. I'm Brian Toporek, and joining me, as always, was Morten Jensen. Mort, have a great, safe vacation, man, and I will talk to you next week.
Thank you, man. Don't die.